This is training meeting number one, and the goal of this meeting is basically to provide you with a walkthrough of the debate to see what the speeches would be like and to show you what happens in a single debate. So today, we'll try to go through the steps of a single debate. Now, as you know, the debate takes place between two teams, the affirmative team and the negative team. And on my right, we have two students who will represent the affirmative team in today's debate. And on my left, I have two students who will represent the negative team. And then, Joanne, I'm going to ask you to represent the judge on today's debate. How's that? On the handout that you have, it sort of has the steps that we'll go through. Let's imagine that we're at a debate tournament. We're at the University of Rochester at the first debate tournament that, our brand new debaters will be going to. And we'll go to the campus on Saturday morning. And when we arrive, we'll all go together. When we arrive there, we'll go to wherever the tournament's being held. And when we get there, they'll have coffee and bagels and donuts and maybe, if we're lucky, some juice. And all the debaters and all the judges will be gathering there. And pretty soon, they'll hand out what are called the pairings. And the pairings are a sheet of paper which says which teams debate which teams in which room with which judge. So you see what's going to happen to you in debate round number one. Now, you would get one of these pairings, and you would get the one corresponding to the division you're entered in. So since you're all beginners, you'd be entered in the novice division. So you get the novice pairings for round one. You would look at them and you would find yourself listed on there as either an affirmative or negative team. Usually the way your team is indicated is the name of your school and then two letters, which will be the first initials of each of the initials of the last name of each of the team members. So you might be Trinity MQ or Vermont RS, and that's how you'll find yourself. So you would look and find yourself on the panel. You'd see what side you are, you would see what room it's in, and you see who your judge is. Next stop, the coaching staff. You meet up with the coaching staff, and they will tell you things about the debate you're about to be in. And the coaching staff will try to know who your judge is, what he or she likes and doesn't like, what some of that person's preferences are in predilections. So you know how to debate in front of them. It's our job to scout the judges for you. However, as time goes on, you need to remember who the judges are so you can remember how to debate in front of them, because you'll have some of the same judges over and over again, and you want to remember that they really didn't like it when you... The other thing that coaches will talk to you about is the team you're about to debate. Odds are we'll know what their arguments are going to be. If you are negative in that debate, we will suggest a strategy to you, what kind of arguments you might use. And these arguments that we'll suggest you use are things that you'll be given weeks before you go to the debate tournament. Come right on in. We're glad to have you. These are arguments that you'll be given weeks before the tournament begins that you sort of know about. Things that say economic sanctions are good and lifting economic sanctions are bad, about the specific countries that are involved in our topic. So the coaches would tell you about the judge, tell you about the strategies involved, and then you would go off for your debate. Now when you get to the debate room, generally it will be held in a classroom, and there will probably only be five people there. You and your partner, the two members of the other team, and the judge. There's no audience because nobody really needs to see your first debate anyway, do they? And also because there are so many debates going on at once that there's not enough audiences to go around. There will be 50 or 60 debates going on at once at many tournaments. We're about to go to a tournament where there will be 117 teams in one division. Now most of the tournaments you'll go to here in our region will be a lot smaller than that, and they'll be at the novice level. So you get to your room. One of the first things you want to do is you want to get to the room soon, because most classrooms have how many tables that you can set up on? One at the front of the room. If you get to the room first, you get to capture the table. Come on in. get to the table so that you and your partner can set up at the table. Otherwise, you have to set up whatever. Now, usually, the affirmative team will set up on one side of the room, and the negative team will set up on the other side of the room, and the judge will sort of be somewhere behind them. Generally, what you do is you sign in. You would write, with the affirmative team, Vermont, Q, XQ, and the first speaker is Zing, and the second speaker is Zing. Assuming those are your really your names. If those, you would write your names, and it's not mandatory that you always write Q and J and X. So you write that on the board. You might say hello to your opponents. They'll have their names on the board. You might want to, you know, like, check them out, eyeball them a little, what they look like. Here they are, your opponents. Then the judge will appear in the room, and when the judge is ready for the debate, everybody will indicate, okay, it's time for the debate, and so the debate will start. All the speeches in the debate and everything that happens, there's time. So somebody needs to have a watch or a timepiece in order to have the debate. If you know where you can get a cheap stopwatch, or if you know anybody that has a stopwatch that you can borrow, you might want one, because it will help you a lot at your first tournament. You need to know when your speech is over, or when it's time for you to speak, so a stopwatch will help you a lot in that regard. Now, there are three kinds of things that happen in the debate. There are the constructive speeches that come first. They're the ones that build the arguments and the issues that the teams want to address. There are the cross-examination periods. After each constructive speech, the person who just spoke gets cross-examined by a member of the other team. And then there are rebuttal speeches, which take place at the end of the debate, where you decide the fate of the issues that you introduced in the constructive speeches. You try to sort of wrap things up. Alright, so let's say that our debate is ready to begin. Our debate is ready to begin, and we're ready for the first affirmative speaker. So the first affirmative speaker will stand up, change onto the podium. We will not require you to deliver a speech, although I bet you could. And so this is the first affirmative speech. This is the only prepared speech in the debate. The affirmative has prepared their first speech. Remember, they're advocating reducing economic sanctions on some countries. Our country, so they have a plan for that, and they present that, and this is the only speech that's scripted. So you know what you're going to say. So if you're afraid of your constructives, you want to be the first affirmative, because you know that it'll be scripted. Now, here's what is going to happen in this speech. The affirmative is basically going to build their case, and it's called the affirmative case. They build their case for the resolution. Generally, this takes place in four separate steps. There's four things that you can guarantee will happen in just about every first affirmative speech. Those four things are, first, he will prove that there's a problem. There's a problem. Children in Iraq are starving because of economic sanctions. Second, he will suggest that the status quo, the system we have now, is not able to solve that problem. Clinton is determined to keep sanctions on to the last minute, no matter how many children it kills. The third thing that he will do is present a plan or a proposal for what the affirmative team thinks needs to be done. So they'll say, we think that all economic sanctions about food and humanitarian assistance should be lifted on Iraq. This is their plan. This is the most important thing in the debate, the plan that the affirmative supports. That's what they're stuck with. They can change their mind about other things, but they're stuck with their plan. The fourth and final thing that he will say is that our plan solves or reduces this problem. Our plan solves or reduces this problem. It's not a very, you know, fancy or complicated advocacy. There's a problem. Here's why we have it. Here's our plan. It works. Just like if you were not doing well in school, you would say there's a problem, I drink too much, I need to stop drinking, and that will improve my schoolwork. Right? It's no different than that in a debate. This is a policy position. At the end of his speech, he delivered a brilliant speech, and it's time for the next thing that happens in the debate, which is cross-examination. Here we go. The second negative speaker will cross-examine the first affirmative constructive. Now, you'll notice these little numbers and letters, 1AC. That's the first affirmative constructive. It's just a little easier to say 1AC than 1NC is the first negative. 2AC is the second affirmative constructive. You get the idea. So the negative speaker will stand up and cross-examine. Natasha wanted you to be our cross-examiner here. And she would stand up at the end of his speech and come on right up and stand next to him. So you would go up and stand next to him, and then she would ask him questions. She's supposed to ask him questions, and he's supposed to answer them. Now, sometimes the questioner doesn't do a very good job of asking good questions. Or the answer may not be cooperative. Remember, it's a competitive thing that's going on here. So she's trying to ask questions to get him to make mistakes. When you cross-examine someone in a debate, you're trying to do a couple of basic things. First, you're trying to gain information, to understand what the heck it was he was just talking about. He might have mentioned something you've never heard of. Dual-use machine control. What are those? Now, you don't want to be surprised later in the debate when you find out that those answer all your arguments. So you would ask about them. So you would gain information. Second thing you would want to do is to get them to make answers that you could use against them. Get them to admit things that you could use later in your speech to show that their arguments aren't very smart or don't work very well. The third thing you want to do in cross-examination is you want to show that you are an intelligent, polite, well-mannered person. That you're not a bozo. That you're not a jerk. There's someone now in the midst of competition, sometimes people can be unpleasant in cross-examination. If other people are unpleasant, the best thing for you to do is to be so nice. The more rude they are, the nicer you are. And the judge, Joanne, will be able to tell the difference, right? Well, that one person's pretty nice, but the other person, you know, kind of a jerk. So that's not going to help very much. So you want to always be nice. Okay? So now the cross-examination lasts for 3 minutes and it's over, and so you would both sit down. Okay? So now we've seen the first affirmative constructive in a cross-examination. Any questions? Okay, we're on it. All right. Now it's time for the first negative constructive speech, which will be Lars. Now, each team has some preparation time. Each team has, at different tournaments, will give you different amounts of preparation time. Let's say 8 minutes is pretty much a standard one. That means the negative can use their preparation time before their speeches, whenever they want. But they only have 8 minutes during the whole debate. So you don't want to use all your preparation time up early in the debate, because you really need it later in the debate when you're trying to figure out how are we going to win. But you have 8 minutes of preparation time. That's why it's good to be prepared and familiar with your arguments in advance. It's good to take notes when your coaches talk to you about what you should argue. And then as soon as you get to the room, you start preparing yourself and your materials. Organization is very important, and debate will help you do that. Okay? So he may use a couple minutes of preparation time. Now Lars stands up. And he delivers the first negative constructive speech. He attacks the affirmative case. He attacks the right. He disagrees with it. He says, it's not true. It's not a problem. Your solution won't work. No one wants your solution. It will cost too much money. Whatever. He will make arguments against the affirmative case. But he also will present some other arguments. At this point in the debate, the negative will introduce issues of their own. Okay? So there are a couple of, so he will attack the affirmative case, but he will also make arguments that are not specifically related to the affirmative case, but nevertheless are very much about it. In other words, these are called off-case arguments. And there's three different kinds of those that I want to mention to you, things that Lars might do against this affirmative team. He might argue that the affirmative plan will lead to some sort of disadvantage. Now, disadvantage is a bad thing that will happen. right? If we adopt their plan, some other bad thing will happen. And that would be a reason to reject their plan, right? Because it causes a bad thing. The second thing he might do is to present a counter plan. He says, you know, it's true that there's a problem that you've identified, but I don't like your plan. I have another one. We should adopt a negative approach to this problem instead. Now, he doesn't have to do that, but he might want to. Sometimes the status quo sucks, right? Sometimes we do need to do something about these ideas. So you don't want to stick the negative in a position of having to say, oh, thousands of children are starving? Tough luck. Right? They want to say, no, we agree children are starving, but we think the sanctions ought to remain, and we have a better way. The Swiss Red Cross should feed them, and the U.S. should continue its sanctions. Okay? Or the Salvation Army should feed them, or the food shelf. The third kind of other argument that Lars might make is called a topicality argument. A topicality argument. This argument says that the affirmative team is not really defending the resolution. This resolution says that the affirmative should reduce economic sanctions. What if the affirmative team stood up and said, we think we should reduce taxes in the United States? Well, they're not really supporting the resolution. The resolution is about economic sanctions, not taxes. So the topicality argument says they should lose the debate because they're not supporting the resolution. Here's an example. If you're in my history class and I assign you to write a paper on the War of 1812 and you hand in a paper about the war in Vietnam, you get an F, right? However, sometimes the affirmative team's tricky. Do you think they might argue that the War of 1812 and the Vietnam War have a lot of things in common, and I'd like to discuss those? You know, as a professor in a history class, I might accept that. Right? So they might have some reason, oh, it really is economic sanction. Trust us. Here, let us explain. Okay? So if they're not advocating the resolution, then you could vote against them, right? So the first thing in the speech, Lars has attacked the affirmative case. He introduced a disadvantage, showing that something bad would happen if we adopt their plan. He decided not to offer a counterplan. And he offered a topicality argument because he thinks that they're not representing the resolution. And that speech would be either 8 or 9 minutes long, and now he's done. There are other things he could have done, but we'll discuss that at a different time. We just want to give you a walkthrough. So now it's time for cross-examination. So the first affirmative speaker would stand up and cross, no Lars, you would say, see, this is why we do this. When novices in their first debate, after they give their first speech, they'll sit down, not realizing that they need to be cross-examined. I just want to mention a couple of things about cross-examination. Your tendency will be to look at each other during cross-examination, but you should not. You should be looking at the judge. You're probably never going to convince Lars that you're right and he's wrong, and vice versa, but you want to see the judge's reaction. When you ask a question, and Joanne goes, yeah. You want to be able to see that. You should watch your judge all the time and get their nonverbals. You'll learn how to read people's nonverbal reactions and read the audience. It's cool. And you guys ask questions, and you're very nice. And now, do you notice that you may ask the question, when do I cross-examine? Because you don't want to go, oh, what, it's my turn? No, it's what? You cross-examine just before your partner speaks. If you don't speak next, then it's time for you to cross-examine. Okay? So this cross-examination period is now over, and you would sit down. This debate is so exciting. And now the second affirmative speaker takes a couple of minutes of preparation time, and then she stands up and jumps up and gives her speech. Now, we can just look at our paper here, and it will tell us exactly what she's supposed to do. She'll defend her case. Those things Lars told you, don't believe those. They're not true. Why? Those children are starving because of U.S. sanctions. Now, the other arguments that Lars made, she has to answer those too. She will answer his disadvantage. She will answer his topicality argument. And then she will conclude with, you know, a little emotional remark about how we have to get rid of economic sanctions because they kill 45,000 Iraqi children every year. I don't know if you're aware of that, but most experts agree with it. Here's one thing you have to remember. you have to answer the other team's argument. If Lars had an argument that said that Russia will be really unhappy if we list the sanctions and it will hurt relations with Russia and that will be really bad, she must answer. You cannot run away from the other team's arguments, or the judge or Joanne will vote against you. If the other team raises an important argument, you must answer. It's not like presidential debates where everybody can avoid the issues and run away from them. You can't. You can run, but you can't hide. Their issues will find you. So the important thing she needs to make sure is to not forget any of the things he said. When you don't answer a major argument by the other team, the word for that is you drop that argument. And if you don't answer the argument, it's assumed you agree with it. Ooh, and you don't want that. Okay? So Marvel's second apartment constructive you gave, I think you need to be cross-examined. Now, who's going to speak next on this team? You've already given a constructive, right? So you're going to be next, right? So who cross-examines now?
Lars.
Lars, exactly. So Lars stands up to make this really quick. He cross-examines her and asks her questions. What if she read some quotation or some material that you didn't understand? Do you think you could ask her to see it? Should she give it to him?
No.
No, I think, well, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything. But the general consensus is that you would show them whatever you have. And the reason why is because you may need to see something of theirs. It's terrible. You go, no, you can't see this. And later on, you go, boy, I really need to see that thing they have over there. Wow. You cannot ask to see things that have not been read in the debate. You say, give me that bottle over there. Right? You can only look at things that have been introduced into the debate. Then you should try to be cooperative. Okay? Cross-examination's over. You would sit down.